And just a quick note to those who are joining us online, we are going to begin today's meeting with an executive session. We intend to try and stay to our time limit of 20 minutes. And we'll just, as soon as we get another board member, we have a quorum and can go ahead and start. And I think Ryan is rejoining.
Okay. Maybe while we're getting started here, I'm Senator Stevenson. I'm a member of the Inland Port Board, and I've worked with the Inland Port legislation since it was an idea several years back, and so very privileged to be here. And what great facilities for a small community in the state of Utah. These are excellent. I'm not sure of the ownership, but whoever's put this together, you should be very proud. These kind of things. I served as a mayor up in Layton at one time, and facilities where that bring the youth or the community together are important. So anyway, what a pleasure to be here today. We have a quorum, so let me very quickly welcome everyone here. Welcome our board. Board members are online. And then apologize to you folks that are here for just a minute or two, because we are going to retire into as soon as I get a motion, we will retire into a closed door meeting where we will discuss real estate and some other things that are involved and are certainly all allowed under Utah law to be discussed in closed door. We'll make no decisions there. We will come back out and then move forward with the balance of the meeting. And thank you very much again for the use of your facilities. And with that, I would look for a board member to offer a motion second to move into closed door. And if you could maybe state the time that we're doing that, and then we will retire to a different room.
Senator, it is 1:40 p.m. and I move that we move into closed door session as a board.
Thank you, Abby. Do I have a second for that motion?
I'll second that.
And I have a second. All in favor of the board moving to closed door, if you would, we probably should vote. Each member should vote. So we could we?
Sure.
I know we have Abby on board, so we'll ask for her vote.
Senator, we should have a motion to close it for one of the specific purposes, which I think you have the language there on the agenda.
Yes, I apologize that I thought I stated that we are moving in to closed doors for real estate. They have something printed for me, which is always best. The board will now vote to move a closed door session to be held now at 1:20 or 1:40, 1233 South Old Highway in Canaroville. Old Highway 91 in Canaroville. Be electronic meeting for the purpose of a strategy sessions to discuss pending reasonably imminent litigation, strategy sessions to discuss the purchase of an exchange of or lease of real property, since the public discussion would disclose the appraisal and the estimated value of the property under consideration or prevent the public body from completing the transaction on the best possible terms. And again, this is all perfectly allowable under Utah law. And with that, we do have a motion from Abby. She has stated the time, so we would call that to a vote. Abby, could I have your vote, please?
Yes.
Yes. Who else do we have on the phone line?
Ryan.
Ryan?
Yes.
Ryan is yes?
Yes.
I am yes, Senator Stevens or Jerry. So
that is everyone.
Okay. And this is a 5-member board. So, that constitutes a quorum. I would move that, or I would, now move us into closed door session. Well, we'd like to welcome everyone back. I need a motion to go back into an open meeting.
I'll make that motion, Senator.
Everybody on the call, is it? Could you mute if not speaking?
I think we've got...
We've got someone on the call that needs to unmute.
Hey, Ben and everybody, I apologize. This is Miles.
Okay, I think we're okay now.
Just dialed in, but I'll go on mute.
Thank you very much. We've concluded our closed door, so we need a board and we'll reconvene immediately from our closed door session. And I need a motion to move back into open meeting. Motion from the board.
Derry, I can make that motion. This is Abby.
A motion from Abby to move the open door. Do I have a second?
I can second that, Jerry. This is Schultz.
Thank you. And I have a second. All in favor of that motion. Larry, will you please give us a roll call vote?
Yes, Senator Stevenson.
Yes.
Mike Schultz.
Yes.
Abby Osborne.
Yes.
Ryan Starks?
Yes.
That's unanimous.
And Larry, just so you know, this is Miles. I was finally able to jump on. Apologies for the delay, but I vote yes as well.
Gotcha. Thanks. We've got you listed online as Abby, so you shared her link to get in.
Oops, sorry about that.
Well, I'd like to welcome our board here. I think the board knows this, but I'll explain it to the audience. The reason I'm here conducting this meeting, I am not the chair, but I'm the only one that doesn't understand technology at all. So that's the reason I'm here in person. Thank you very much. I believe this is one of the largest inland port meetings we've had for quite a while since we had, attempted takeovers from protesters were in place, but you folks look all very friendly. So we appreciate having you here. Let's move on with our agenda now. And, Miles, I know that you've read a lot of, or brought forward a lot of the rules and so forth that we have, but. I don't believe I'm going to, just because it looks like we have a pretty friendly crowd here. I don't think I'm going to, go through the process of some of the lengthy things that we normally do. The Inland Port is, we had a little bit of a, the history, the startup history was a little bit rough and the goal, and it was, we had a very large political board. It did not work well. We now have, 5 individuals on this board that are all very oriented to making sure we accomplish things for the state of Utah that we need to accomplish. So with that, let's now move into our agenda. Our agenda, our open session. Miles, you're normally conducting. I hope I do you proud because you do an amazing job here.
Senator Stevenson, you are the master at conducting meetings. So I'm very grateful that you're there in person leading the way for us. And I'm happy to hear and take notes on watch and learn about how the master does it so I can try to be a little bit better next time.
Thank you. Well, that's the first business of the meeting then should be to get the minutes of the last meeting approved. So I have, I think we need a minute approval. If I could get someone online to make that motion.
Happy to do that, Jerry.
February
27th meeting minutes, I have moved to approve.
I'll second that.
Have a motion to approve. Did I get a second on that?
Yeah, Ryan's second.
Thank you. That would be the meeting of February the 27th, 2023. So we have the motion. Any discussion on the motion? Those in favor of the motion, would you please give us a roll call? Larry.
Sure. Senator Stevenson.
Aye.
Representative Schultz.
Yes.
Abby Osborne.
Yes.
Ryan Starks.
Yes.
Miles Hansen.
Yes.
Thank you very much. That is unanimous, and I would declare that that motion passes. Minutes are approved. We would move now to our executive director report. Mr. Ben Hart is here with us. Ben, the time is yours.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair, and for those of our board members who are online and those who in the public are here with us today, hopefully everyone can hear me okay. I'm going to ask whoever has my slides if they can roll slides. I'm not sure who or if anyone does, but if we may not have them. Okay, so I will just jump into it then. Let me first just say thank you everyone for being here today. This is one of our first offsite board meetings, and it's for a very important cause. So today we're excited to be able to have the board consider the adoption of the first rural inland port project here in the state of Utah. So primarily so far, our efforts have been focused up in Salt Lake City, and now we have a chance to spread out and to be able to work here in Cedar City. We're ecstatic for that. Thank you to BZI for hosting us today, and thank you to their team. We know that it's not easy to host a board meeting at a facility that probably is not meant to host board meetings, but thank you for being willing to host us. We really appreciate you welcoming us in and the graciousness you've shown us in having your facility open to us. So let me just first start by saying I'll go through my executive director report. Today is a very awesome day. We've got some tremendous things that are happening here in Iron County. We do have some business that we have to conduct as well. So I'll just speak to the agenda for a second and say that there's a lot of items that we'll be working through today that will be related to the general business of the port. And I'll kind of start the executive director's report right there saying that over the last several months, we've had a pretty significant pivot. And I've said this a few times, certainly internally, but it feels like we've had to do 4 years worth of work in about 6 months, making sure that we get policy where we need it, making sure that we get all of our internal procedures, board procedures, everything to the place where we need to be able to start working with communities in a way to really empower them. And so we're excited for the opportunity that we have now to recognize this is a really important mile marker in terms of the development of the Utah Inland Port Authority. And our ability to onboard a project area is very important for us as we seek to really, really amplify our mission, which is to empower communities all throughout the state through logistics and project areas. So we're excited for what today means, not only in terms of just the announcement of a project area, but where we are as a port and what we're going to be able to do moving forward. Let me give just a very quick update. We are working with several communities all across the state. We would like to work with communities where they have an interest and we have the ability to help, whether it's through project area and logistic facility development, whether it's helping them to develop out the economic focal areas related to those logistics areas. But we will have, and we just want to keep everyone, the public aware, we anticipate that we'll be bringing several more project areas to our board for adoption over the next 6 to 9 months or so. So this is the first. Cedar City is and Iron County are amazing. They were very quick to put this all together. They were first across the finish line, but we have several other counties that we'll be working with as well as we try and bring more of these project areas out to the people, out to the communities that we serve. We feel like this is the purpose of the port. We understand 12 months ago, 24 months ago, there was very much an external focus. We understand why that was. As we were looking to create global partnerships and national partnerships, what we've really, really tried to do over the last 6 months is turn this back around and really focus on the counties and the communities that will move our state forward. And so we're excited to be able to have a much stronger internal focus with the state of Utah. And consequently, we'll be working with several other communities to have project areas that are adopted here in the next several months. As part of that, our main focus always is how do we create the logistics and volume flow? How are we working with businesses in this community to make sure that they're aware of these facilities and can optimize them? One of the things that we want to put into the public awareness and also into our board's awareness as we move forward is that we have had some rural counties that have approached the port about doing projects in project areas that are really meant to benefit the economy within their communities. And we may not see the logistics touch point right up front. We did not want to bring an official policy to the board as of yet, because we wanted to make sure that, one, we said this in an open meeting and people had a chance to provide feedback before we started to develop a policy, but ultimately that would allow us to work with primarily fourth, fifth, sixth class counties and those who may not have the technical expertise to create a project area, but whereby they could really, really benefit from the creation of a project area to facilitate the economic growth in their respective counties. We're seeing this more and more across the state of Utah. For us, we would consider these administrative light projects, but we feel like there's a role that we could play that would really benefit the communities that may not have an overt logistics touch point right up front. We do not want to get away from our logistics core, and I'll talk about that in just one second. We don't want to get away from our core mission and responsibilities, but we are finding that there's a lot of rural economic need throughout the rural part of the state. And our ability and the capabilities that we have as a port to be able to explore those options and to be able to provide support is significant. And so we're getting that request from a lot of different communities, and I'll say this again, primarily smaller population-wise counties. So it's something that we'll look at addressing over the next several months in policy, but we want to make sure that we're putting that on the public record for awareness so that the public will have a chance to weigh in, but also board members will have a chance to weigh in over the next several months. Other items related to our progress over the last couple of months, we have awarded, the board gave us an opportunity to award contracts for rail and logistics expertise. So we are looking at awarding contracts to CPCS and to Savage to support the development of logistics facilities across the state of Utah. As we ran an RFP, we got people who had come back, several proposals. We felt like a multi-award with CPCS and Savage was the right way to go. And so the board had given us approval to authorize those contracts, but I wanted to put it on the public record before we execute those contracts and just let the public and the board know that a selection had been made. We did consult with a couple of board members prior to making that award, and we feel like these are going to give us the expertise and the wherewithal that we need to really have successful projects throughout the state, as we're looking to create not just one facility, but a network, an interconnected network to really help with volume flows throughout the state of Utah. The last item that I wanted to bring up for our executive director's report and just for the board's consideration, I was able to attend an AAPA, which is a national conference of port facilities across the country last week. And just a couple of key takeaways from this. I had a chance to be in Washington, D.C. with my colleagues from all over the country, and in some cases even the world. There are two key takeaways. One, the states that are focused on logistics with a statewide organization like ours are few and far between. In fact, I think we're probably the only one that can really say, look, let's look at the comprehensive logistics system and regional facilities or whatever it may be. Let's come up with the right long-term logistics strategy. And Chad will talk a little bit more about that. But there are not too many other states that are invested in this the way the state of Utah is. This is absolutely going to put us at the head of the conversation when it comes to global trade in the next 20, 30, 40 years. An organization like ours that is absolutely keyed into global logistics and supply chain is absolutely critical. Yet we're kind of unique in the country. There are other states that have port authorities, but it's primarily focused on the development of actual infrastructure. The other thing that I would say is, and I thought this was where we had more commonality with other port authorities, is that port authorities all over the country are diversifying as well. I think a lot of them are taking on economic development, and interestingly enough, a lot of them are taking on clean energy scopes and missions as well. So it's not uncommon to see port authorities that are diversified within their scope. I would say we are very, very unique and incredibly potent because we have the combination of logistics and economics. Those two things together are an incredible opportunity and an incredible, incredibly potent force that we can use to benefit communities all across the state of Utah. So to those who worked on and created the Utah Inland Port Authority, I would say not only do we have the right scope and right mission, but we're moving forward at a rate that I think will put us ultimately ahead of every other state in the country when it comes to logistics. But that all starts today with projects like what we're seeing here in Iron County. And so the chance that we have to work hand in glove with the commissioners, the leadership team here, this is the beginning. This is not the end. This is the beginning of an effort that will create facilities, logistics facilities, intermodal, whatever they may look like, facilities all across the state of Utah as we work with communities that I am convinced will generate economic growth and returns for generations to come. So I would say the port is stronger than it has ever been. Our scope is more aligned with where we need to be going than we have ever been. And we are excited for the future. And Mr. Chair, that is the executive director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Director. That's encouraging. I'm very quickly, one sentence. I spent last week in Taiwan, and they are very aware of what we're doing in the state of Utah from an inland port perspective. They're excited about it. There's a lot of things going on with it. And you would be very surprised to see how they're interconnected, but they are aware and they are excited. They think we've got a lot of potential here. With that, I think we'll now move on the agenda to the consideration of resolution 2302. Larry, would you please read the resolution to the into the record? And then we would ask Mr. Hart if he would please share some information on the purpose of this resolution.
Yes, this is resolution 2023-02, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority appointing Ben Bies as treasurer.
The background, Mr. Chair and members of the board, is last month we presented this to the board as what we would be looking to do when Dan Hemmert exited the board and Ryan Starks joined. We lost the treasurer of our board, so we needed to appoint another one. Statute does not say that it has to be a board member, and we felt after getting direction from the board that appointing our CFO and our deputy director, Ben Bies, as the new treasurer of the board was the right thing to do. And so that is the resolution that is before you, is officially making that appointment.
Thank you. I would now look to the board for a motion that we appoint Ben Bies as our treasurer.
I so move. This is Miles.
Miles, we have a motion. Could I get a second nomination on that?
Yep. I'll second that motion. Ms. Schultz.
I think I have a motion from Miles and a second from Schultz, from Mike Schultz. If that is the case, is there any discussion on the motion? If none, those in favor, we will. Larry, would you please give us a roll call?
Yes. Senator Stevenson.
Aye.
Representative Schultz.
Yes.
Abby Osborne.
Yes.
Ryan Starks.
Yes.
And Miles Hansen.
Yes.
That's unanimous.
Thank you very much. That is unanimous vote. I would welcome Bryn Bies is our treasurer, and we will next move to where we've just appointed as treasurer. We would ask for that title be added as the Utah Inland Port to his other titles, which are Utah Inland Port Deputy Director, Chief Financial Officer. Anyway, our agenda item will be that to hear a budget update from Bryn next. Excuse me, I apologize for the name mistake there. Go ahead.
No problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As part of the treasurer duties here, I just want to give a quick budget update to the board. And a few of the things that we're going to be talking about are to get us in full compliance with the legislative audit recommendations. from the audit that we got last September. So part of that was having a treasurer, which we've done since Dan was the treasurer. And I will be continuing. The other part is giving quarterly budget updates and then some of the details that you'll find in your board packet. So on page 9 of your board packet, you'll find the sheet that I'm sharing. It's just a quick snapshot of where we're at on our budget so far. In this column on the in the middle of the page there, FY23 approved budget, that was a budget that was approved by the board last June for the current fiscal year. So obviously a lot has changed since then. We have a few line items that are a little bit different than projected. So I'll just go through a couple of those real quick and then happy to take any questions. So three of them that are kind of related are the office lease, the that bottom line of office build out, and then the office supplies. So we planned to build all our office and expand our current building. That is currently on hold. So while we did pay that money is a little more than it had been budgeted, we had some extra money budgeted in the office supplies and other materials for that, which is covering that shortfall as well as, some additional furniture and other office supplies that we needed. So, because we haven't actually expanded yet, that is a little bit out of whack, as is the office lease amount, because we were expecting to have some free months of rent and then a little bit higher rent once we moved in. So, that's the biggest change on here. You can see that we're under projection on our personnel, our travel budgets. That's all looking good. Professional services, we are projecting to be a little bit over our budget. And overall, we're just right about where we're projected, slightly over right now, but we think that should shake out in the next few months. If not, we'll have a budget amendment hearing, along with our new budget adoption for FY24 coming up in June. That's our general fund. We also have a capital budget fund. This is made up of the infrastructure funding that was given to us by the legislature, through the Department of Transportation, total of $24 million, as well as the tax differential. And because the inland ports plans when this budget was adopted was still to build a port facility, this is quite different than was proposed at the time. The good news is we are well under the expected projection of $15.9 million. We're only projected to be about $8.3 million this year, but the way that money is being spent is quite different. The good news also is that we got quite a bit more tax differential than was planned. That's going to result in a higher than expected payment to Salt Lake City for their 10% affordable housing piece. You can see there. The other costs are not going to be nearly as high in terms of site improvements or preparation costs or publicly owned infrastructure and improvements. That $3.5 million you can see there is the big expenditure so far. That was for the road out there in the jurisdictional area. And that covers everything I wanted to cover on our budget update. You will see on the following pages, on page 10 is a summary of the total payments we've made by vendor. If you're interested in that, as well as starting on page 11, the vendor payment detail, again, in full compliance with those audit recommendations, wanted to provide that information to the board. I'm not going to show it, but it is provided for your study, and happy to answer any questions on the budget or anything else.
Ben, I hate to apologize for fouling up your introduction there. I got ahead of myself. You know, I used to serve as a mayor of a community, and you get to just kind of make it up as you go along if you're a mayor. They've got an agenda for me to follow here, and apparently I don't follow well. So,
not a problem at all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Any questions from the board? Thank you very much, Ben. Appreciate it. Let's move on. Chad Whitlock, Utah Inland Port Chief Operating and Logistics Strategy Officer, is now going to provide us with logistics plan update. And go ahead, Chad.
good afternoon. So today I would like to start with some of the challenges that are impacting supply chain. And there's really three different levels of challenges that we're discussing here. We're talking about challenges that stem from global sources, challenges that stem from national or domestic sources, and then, of course, we have our own local challenges that we're dealing with as well. So I could spend a lot of time on each one of these subjects. I just want to touch on a few of these that I think are relevant and that are going to play very strongly here in the near future. The first one from a global perspective is demographics. The United States, Europe, and also Asia is going through a period where the base population workforces, the older portions of the workforces, are aging out of the workforce. And so we've got the boomer cohort here in the United States that fortunately we have a replacement for, which is the millennial generation. But Asia and Europe and South America, for the most part, do not have those replacement populations ready to replace the aged out portions of their workforce. And so what that means is really a couple of things. If you're an organization and you have a low value input into your supply chain or manufacturing, then you've got some options. You can probably take care of this with immigration or with some just low level training and bring that skill force into your organization and continue doing business. But if you're in an organization that has medium level or high level inputs, high value inputs that are going into your manufacturing and supply chain processes, you're a little bit up the creek. If the workforce isn't there, you need to go find it. And so what that translates then into is organizations looking for a place that they can do business simply because from a supply chain, from a supply and demand standpoint, they cannot supply the materials that they traditionally been able to do. So the ability then for UIPA to explore partnerships and fits into the individual jurisdiction, the project area, then I think becomes something that's very powerful that we can leverage also with logistics, which I'm going to get to here in a second. From a national standpoint, we're all seeing this. The move from a just-in-time inventory system to a just-in-case inventory system, COVID did this, where now we're not sure of the supply chain, that being able to get what I need to make the widgets that I perhaps am doing, that surety isn't there. And so what has happened across the nation is all kinds of warehousing space has sprung up, and now I'm just stocking the raw materials and the widgets into the warehouse instead of having to gamble whether they're going to make it over the ocean or whatever. And then the third one, local, this gets pretty interesting as well. The one that I want to focus on here is the challenge with coordination. So from a coordination standpoint, being able to sit down with shippers, being able to sit down with freight forwarders and expediters, being able to sit down with folks, landowners, and people who just operate in their own silo, and to coordinate that and to bring all of that into a focused strategy for the state to enhance that capability and to enhance logistics is something that UIPA can do as well. So it's this area that I want to focus on as far as the strategy goes. We can't do too much about the global forces that you see. We can't do too much about the national forces that you see. But from a local standpoint, we can do some things about this. And so my next slide is going to focus from a logistics standpoint, how we can potentially position ourselves so that we can start enhancing logistics throughout the state. So in our first year, we're going to have our focus is on data and strategy. The data side of things is really interesting. The logistics and supply chain space is very fractured, very siloed, and zealously guard their secret. And this makes sense because you're dealing with a lot of private-based entities that if the shipping and pricing information were to be public, then they could potentially be tipping their hand to their competition. And that's something that everybody knows about. And so you've got an organization, or excuse me, an industrial space where you have databases all over the place. There isn't a single unifying database. And so when we're trying to figure out what commodity flows look like throughout the state, it becomes a challenge. It's very difficult to do because there are so many data sources to go and look at. And again, nothing that's really unified. And so our first year is going to be focused on identifying the proper data sources. And then we'll also be identifying what the strategy should be for the state to enable the logistics infrastructure within the jurisdictional area and also within the project area to enable the project areas to be able to do logistics moving forward. Our second year, we're going to move to an implementation and execution state. This is where we're going to start identifying the logistics center and have them defined for the logistics in the project areas that we're dealing with. And then also, we want to start focusing on a freight mobility and a trade plan. This is a commodity flow for the state. This is understanding what is moving from one county to another, or from one county to a different state, or from a different state into that county. And we want to have that data. We just need to identify the data sources that we're going to go and get to give us that picture. We also want to focus on localized freight strategy. And also, we want to start fleshing out and implementing alternative fuel corridors throughout the state. We want the cargo and the freight to move, but we want this to be done in a sustainable and environmentally conscious way. And this is something that we'll be focusing on. And then, in our third year, we'll have a freight mobility and trade plan that's actually in action. We'll have a custom strategy that's underway, a forward trade zone strategy that's underway. And then alternative fuel corridors, they'll be established. And this is something that we'll continue to do from this year on. And then we'll also have a local identification of trade bottlenecks. And so what are the local bottlenecks that are impeding or slowing down or adding friction into trade? We want to know what those are. The commodity flows, that data that I was speaking to earlier, will help us do that. And then from a regional standpoint, we want to engage partners from a regional standpoint and then focus on those regional bottlenecks as well. If we focus on local only, and we have a bottleneck that's happening in the California ports, which we do, or in Nevada, which can happen, then what we do locally isn't going to matter as much as far as getting things in as in the speeds that we want them here in the state. And so having those regional partnerships and focusing on those partnerships and those bottlenecks is something that we'll be doing in year four. And then by year five, we will have infrastructure that is up. We will have logistics centers that have been designed that are either underway or that are built. And by year five, we will also have a way to focus on these project areas that we're working on and the inland ports that we're establishing to see how they're performing from a market perspective. What does pricing look like? What does volume flow look like? What do commodity flows look like? What are the opportunities that are available for all of that so that we can and continue to enhance and continue to work with these project areas to make sure that they're up to speed, whatever that means in the reviews that we're doing with them. And so these reviews will probably happen about once every 5 years or so. But again, it's to make sure that that viability in the market is something that retains a focus and that is something that is sharpened as we move forward. And so these right here are what we're going to be focused on from a logistics standpoint over the next 5 years and kind of how we're going to go through and execute against them. It's really interesting. The logistics side of things is more of an enhancer to the business development and the ability to empower the local economy. We're not going to be able to do one really without the other. But in order to focus on what logistics we bring into the different areas and the different projects, we have to understand what is being moved in and out of the area. And that is one of those things that we're going to have here pretty quickly. Any questions?
Chad, Mr. Chair,
please.
Sorry, just one thing to add to that. Thank you, Chad, for all your time and effort that you put into this. As we move forward with this logistics plan, we would like to actually finalize this. We, as the board knows, we have another RFP out for a significant study that we're working on in the Northwest Quadrant related to interconnectivity of volume and freight cargo throughout the state. We would actually like to, in the next several months, bring back a formalized logistics strategy for the state of Utah. This will be a living, breathing document. We'll have to update it as we need to. But as we're looking throughout the state, what we've got here in Iron County is amazing. You've got partners, Savage, BZI, that are ready to own, operate their facilities. That's not going to be the way it is across the state. There may be parts of the state where we need to be owners of facilities and we need to lease out. We may need to own a yard and next to a facility. There could be any number of situations that are appropriate for a specific area. So we want to be able to have the foresight, the vision, the strategy in place while also giving us the flexibility to do what is optimal for that area. So thank you to Chad for his work. And our intent, again, is to bring back to you a more formalized logistics strategy for the state over the next couple of months that will speak to, I think, the finer details of what Chad has presented on.
Thank you, Chad. Thank you, Ben. Appreciate that input on direction. And let's now move on to next agenda item, presentation.
Hey, Senator Stevenson.
Yes, please.
Can I just jump in? And I just want to underscore how important the work is that Chad and Ben are talking about. You know, if you think about it at the core and going back to the strategy document that Ben and the team worked on several months ago, at the core of the inland port, if we're successful, we'll be investing in the infrastructure, the partnerships, building relationship with whether it's railroads or global shipping companies, all with an eye towards giving companies in Utah a competitive advantage because of the efficiency and our ability to get goods in and out of this cargo shed more efficiently than other states and other parts of the country and other parts of the world. And so as we've been.
Thank you. That was Chairman Hansen. I failed to recognize him. And those brilliant comments were the reason he was elected chair. So that was, thank you very much, Miles. Any other comments from the board? None. Let's move on to our next agenda item. We're running about a half hour or headed for a half hour behind. So I'm going to try and be fairly thrifty as we move forward here. Next agenda item is a presentation of several amendments to the Northwest Quadrant project area. I believe that is going to be presented by Mr. Stephen Smith, Director of Business Development. He'll discuss those proposed amendments.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Board. During the last board meeting in December, we reviewed the Northwest Quadrant plan. This amends that master plan essentially and brings that into what we're looking at as more of the template for a project area plan and budget. And while the Northwest Quadrant jurisdiction doesn't necessarily need to be in that format, we want to make sure that it's consistent. Additionally, this is a living document. So we expect to see updates to this on regular frequencies as this evolves and as the project area moves forward. So there's a few key things that this does. This will add a recruitment strategy to the phase one goals and expands on the industries of focus. So when we look at the plan, which you should have in your board packet, in addition to the initial areas of focus that we were looking at, clean energy, biotech, composites, aerospace and defense, advanced manufacturing, we've added several others, including electric and automated technologies related to clean technology, environmental technology, Great Salt Lake preservation research and technology, outdoor research, agritech, financial and technology services. So for the Northwest Quadrant, those are the areas that we want to zero in on initially. Our recruiting strategy comes along with an incentive strategy that we also outline in the document, and how we will look to outline that for potential businesses coming in. And want to note that this is in partnership with other resources, both local and statewide, with our partners at Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity, EDC Utah, local, and as we get into other project area plans, that's Association of Governments, will all be part of that objective, as well as the local economic development agencies. Additionally, this adds purpose and intent clarification to the document, adds the boundaries of the Northwest Quadrant. We felt that was appropriate to have in there. The project area budget, which is was outlined with interlocal agreement, is included in this document as well. And it also adds reference to the Northwest Quadrant Sustainability Action Study and Report. Action study report findings and recommendations. Again, that was presented to the board back in February. This also adds key performance indicators, so how we're going to measure success in the Northwest Quadrant project area. So, again, this is an expanding document. This is a living document. This sharpens it. This makes it stronger as we go forward, and we're looking forward to moving into the future phases of this plan. Any questions?
Does the board have any questions to ask of Mr. Smith?
Mr. Chair, can I add?
Yes, please.
Let me just add quickly for those in the room and maybe for those who are online as well. We're doing this for a couple of reasons, and Stephen outlined them very, very well. But let me just hit with an exclamation point. We need to show Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County the same respect we're going to show every other community in the state. And we feel like that's important, because what that project will do in Salt Lake City will have an impact all across not only that region, but across the state. So these changes bring the amendments, bring this into conformity with what we would do with the project area plan and budget in other parts of the state. You're going to see us work more hand in glove with Salt Lake City. We're going to really target the businesses that we feel like line up with the 2016 Salt Lake City Northwest Quadrant Master Plan. But for those who are online as well, we know that recruitment and incentives sometimes are a four-letter word, but we want to be able to have something to put on the table when we have the right projects to make sure we get those projects in the Northwest Quadrant. So, Stephen, thank you. Very thorough job, very well done. Just a reminder to the public, we're not adopting that today. Today's the first meeting. We will look for the next board meeting to adopt those amendments.
Thank you, Ben. Do we have any comments from the board on this? If there are no board comments, let's move to our next presentation. Amy Brown Kofin, Chief Compliance Officer. Amy, she's going to review proposed revisions of the governing document for the Crossroads Public Infrastructure District.
Thank you, Amy.
Go ahead.
All right. Thank you. We are covering today five policies in total, three of which is their first time, and as we have presented in our policy review, for the first time, these are just informational. So the first three I'll be covering today are really around some of those audit best practices that Ben Bias had alluded to, that some of those activities and things that we wanted to put in place. The first one is the board governance. That is the proposed BP 14. This really fits a lot of the hallmarks of those best practices, having board members recognize that their role is to be more than a ceremonial body, to lead and hold staff accountable for results. Some other things codified in this is, you know, the board chair reviewing and approving the agenda before each meeting, inviting other board members to propose items, talking about also in this policy, the role of the board chair, vice chair, secretary, and treasurer. I did want to point out, put this on the record, that in the best practices, it mentioned about having a separate board clerk. We believe with the controls set place in finance, as well as our finance team, that at this time we don't need a clerk, but you can see in this policy an outline of the responsibilities for those board members. Within this policy, we talked about just those individual board member duties, how we would handle new board member orientation, with which our board secretary, Larry Shepherd, would be overseeing, putting in term limits, state statute for voting board members codifies a term limit. However, for non-voting board members, it's at the board's discretion. Keeping in with the precedent set in statute, we're proposing a 4-year a term limit with the option to renew for a secondary term. We're also putting in this how that board meetings, how they would be conducted, specifically a meeting on a quarterly minimum basis, putting in, you know, as the compliance to the annual budget and required training that the board members must adhere to. I'll pause there just in case there's any board questions on this board governance policy.
Thank you, Amy. Are there any questions? Does the board have any questions or discussion on this? If not, we will move.
I can go to, I've got a couple more policies. I just wanted to pause between those, if that's okay.
Please go ahead. I've got you behind me as the way you're set up. Wave, you'll need to really stick your arm out so I can see it.
So the next policy that we have up for introduction is this BP-15 Code of Conduct. Several key points talking about from the best practices, having the board adopt a code of ethics, as well as a conflict of interest policy. We felt that this code of conduct policy really embodies those aspects of ethical organizational value and behaviors. Really part of this is just the board holds everyone accountable, including management, to those high standards of performance. That the board also seeks opportunities to reinforce our organization's ethical standards. What we cover in this policy is our values. We've got our 5 values within it. There's some connection with this in how we can how concerns can be reported both internally, and then also that goes in concert with our whistleblower policy. Also covers topics of abusive conduct prevention, workplace harassment, and conflicts of interest for both staff and board. As we know from state statute, there are conflicts of interest disclosures and requirements around that. One of the things that we've proposed in this is that as we have new project areas come on board, that we want to make sure that there's an amendment done to those to make sure that we are not losing any traction around the conflicts of interest from the board. If there were any potential project area that was forthcoming and if there were any board members that had conflicts, that they would be excused from those conversations. And also with that, with the policy, we talk about maintaining good financial records, overall financial management, as well as gifts and political activity and other things that could put any staff or board member in a area of being biased. The next new one that we are also introducing is the one about our PID policy, our public infrastructures districts. This is BP-16. We feel really that it's important for us to put a policy that helps create a framework for how we would oversee and administrate these PIDs. We do have one at this point in time, that is the Crossroads PID, which I'll be speaking to around that. I realize on this, I do apologize that I jumped to the policies instead of the PID itself. With this, we talk about the board member requirements that are involved, the approval process, the governing documents, and amendment and compliance and reporting. So those are the 3 new policies that we are presenting for today. But this, I will go back to the agenda item and around the Crossroads PIDs governing document. And this actually goes nicely with this PID policy that we are putting forth for its first initial review. As we reviewed this existing Crossroads PID governing document, we realized there's some things that we wanted to enhance with that. This goes in cadence with this PID policy that we are putting forth today. What we are seeking with this because this PID is a UIPA board created PID. We want to amend these governing documents and make sure that they expand upon things specific to Section 6 with the District Board of Trustees. We clarified language about how board members are approved. There was some conflicting language around that. Also adding more language around the terms for trustees. And also a change around the district executive director. Felt that it's important that prior this was the chief operating officer, but because so much of this is a fiduciary responsibility, that the district executive director would be the chief financial officer of UIPA. So my apologies for changing the agenda a little bit and skipping ahead. I will pause there because I know the next step is to go forward on a resolution around the Crossroads PID specifically.
Thank you. Amy, does that conclude your presentation?
I do have two more policies for that we are looking to have the board approve. If you would like me to cover those as well at this point in time, I can.
I think what we'd like to do right now, first, let's back up and adopt, adopt the resolution, and then we'll come back to you. Okay.
Yes. That's
fine. Thank you. So we need to, we're now going to move on resolution, 2023-04. Larry, could you please read the resolution into the record for us?
Yes, resolution 2023-04, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority amending the Crossroads PID governing document and appointing two additional trustees.
Thank you very much. Do we have questions from the board at all on what we're doing? If there are no questions, I would like a motion to adopt.
Jerry, can I just ask a question really quick? What page is this resolution on in the board packet? Sorry, I am like spinning here.
I'm sorry, Abby, your page numbers would be different than any of the printed documents we have here.
Okay. I'm finding it. Hold on.
It's
I got it. Thank you.
If you have it.
I've got it, Jerry. I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So with that, do we have a motion?
I'll make the motion. This is Abby.
Okay.
And this is Miles. I'll go ahead and second.
We have a motion and second to adopt resolution 2023-04. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye. All in favor of the motion is we're going to have a roll call.
Yes, Senator Stevenson.
Yes.
Abby Osborne.
Yes.
Ryan Starks.
Yes.
And Miles Hansen.
Yes.
And we'll note that Representative Schultz is no longer on the call.
Okay.
Or right. Abby or Victoria.
That's four of the five board members. I rule if that motion passes. Let's move on. If we would, Amy, if we could ask you to go ahead and make the presentation you would make, just make it rather tight if you would. We will have a lot of time to review that, and we'll see if we can play a little catch up here. Okay.
Great. Yes, I will make this brief. This these last two policies we did present. This is actually the third time we have brought them up. These are really two policies that are critical to our organization around how we bring together project area and property tax differential. That's BPO4. And also the BP13, which is around the due diligence we do in overseeing and administering the Authority Infrastructure Bank. Since this time, the reason why we've had three times to present it, we were in the legislative session and there were some changes with the bill in place. We wanted to make sure that the amendments to our statute went fully in motion and were implemented before we brought this up for approval to make sure there was nothing in conflict. So as it stands, there were no changes since the last time, but we feel confident that these really cover a lot of the areas of due diligence and oversight and assurance around these two areas of how we handle and manage projects, as well as how we would oversee the administration investment for infrastructure projects through the AIB. I will pause there if there's any questions that I can answer. Otherwise, we can move on to, I think we wanted to have a public comment about these before we sought approval to open this up for a general comment prior to the board taking action.
Okay, thank you. Those are two new policies that we have before us that we'll consider in another meeting. Anyone have any comment or question? If not, we will move on to the public comment portion of our meeting. Larry, can you please open the queue? If you wish to give, if you wish to, as a member of the public wish to do have a comment virtually, now is the time to raise your hand virtually, and then we will add you to the queue. Once you begin, we will no longer accept any other comment cards or additions to our virtual menu. So if you could begin with that. And then upon, excuse me, the light's really not very good up here. Upon recognition of the chair, the speaker will shall approach the microphone and be unmuted and give their comments. Now, we have the comment coming in via virtual, and we have public comments. I think we're going to take those. How many in the audience, by raise of hands, have a comment here today? Boy, this isn't going to take a lot of time. We may catch up quickly. Thank you very much. So do we have people online right now?
We've got seven.
We have seven onliners. So we're going to hold their comments to 2 minutes. And, we would, with that, I think we can go ahead and move to the virtual portion of our meeting. And so I would recognize, who am I recognizing?
First up will be Melinda McElwain.
Okay, Melinda, the time is yours. You have 2 minutes. Melinda, are you there?
Okay, can you hear me now?
There we go. Thank you.
All right, I want to thank the board for this opportunity to speak today. My name is Melinda McElwain. I'm Salt Lake City citizen. I understand UEPA is planning to provide tax breaks to Savage Services and Commerce Crossroads for the proposed Iron Springs Inland Port. I feel that taxpayers should have a voice and should not be expected to subsidize a business that ought to pay for itself. Apparently this development will impact Utah prairie dog habitat. And I'd like to remind you that's a species that is on the endangered list. There is no demand for this project in terms of volume right now. And those products may include coal and alfalfa. Alfalfa is an inappropriate crop for a desert state, such as Utah. And coal flies in the face of the Biden administration's climate change objectives to develop green energy sources and reduce dependence on coal and fossil fuels. Furthermore, you state several times you wish to benefit rural economies, and that is a worthy goal, but what kind of development do you wish to enable? There's a lot of talk of mention of green and sustainable practices and alternative fuel corridors, but we have yet to see this kind of development here in Salt Lake. And I ask you, is it wise to rush forward with a plan to make Utah link in global commerce? From a climate change perspective, the current costs of transplanetary trade invite more pollution for our oceans and atmosphere. I believe a return to more locally centered economies is where we need to focus. Thank you.
Thank you, Melinda. You were very good with your time. Thank you very much. Our next comment will be from
Stan Holmes.
You say Ben?
Dan Holt.
Dan, are you?
Yes, Dan Holmes, Salt Lake City. Good afternoon. And thanks for this opportunity to comment. I have several questions about Savage's role as a major player at Iron Springs. It seems that Savage Services seeks public financial backing for a rail port largely dependent on foreign exports of Utah coal and alfalfa. What I'd like to know is, what is the Iron Springs project area's contingency plan if the markets for these controversial export commodities are seriously diminished or collapse? I wonder, what are the prospects for Savage's success as a business entity underwritten, some may say subsidized, by public policy and funding? Where does Savage Services expect to find a West Coast port to export coal? Recall that Oakland has said no, the Richmond coal terminal will close, and Ensenada, Mexico would require a new rail line south of the border. Does Savage intend to apply for any of the state's $53 million throughput infrastructure fund money to secure an export facility for its coal and or alfalfa transshipments? Well, what hazardous materials does Savage contemplate shipping from its Iron Springs rail port? And has each potential hazardous commodity been considered via environmental review prior to UEPA approval of the Iron Springs project area plan? I also would like to know, what is the potential health risk exposure of patrons and staff at nearby Iron Springs Resort from materials that Savage might export? I'm reminded of the recent peer-reviewed study on negative impacts of coal train air pollution on adjacent communities. And the reporters in Air Quality, Atmosphere, and Health Journal found that exposure to fine particulate matter, PM2.5, is associated with adverse health effects, including mortality, even at low concentrations. They concluded that rail shipment of coal generates coal dust and is likely to have, adverse effects on health. And then lastly, will UEPA policy or policies guiding satellite ports and project areas development prioritize consideration of off-site impact factors its translated materials might have on climate change and water resource availability? And I hope that's within 2 minutes. And thanks again for the opportunity.
Thank you, Stan. We appreciate your comment. And I think all these raise great questions. We as staff and board members will consider those. Thank you. Let's move on next to...
Yes, next up is Steve Erickson.
Steve Erickson. Steve, are you available? Steve? Sometimes the mute button on maybe is not in place.
He's unmuted.
Steve, can you hear us?
He just muted back.
I see your mute button going on and off. And it looks like it's off at the moment. Please talk.
Steve Erickson. Can we hold him and move on? Let's move on to the next comment.
Next up then would be Brian Munch.
Mm-hmm. Brian Munch.
Okay. Brian Munch.
Am I unmuted now?
There we go. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Brian Munch, president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. For at least 25 years, virtually the entire world's scientific community has been warning that continuing to accumulate atmospheric greenhouse gases will lead to an apocalyptic climate crisis. More specifically, climate experts have warned that we have likely less than 10 years left to dramatically reduce atmospheric carbon emissions, or we will have guaranteed that climate feedback loops will render virtually every other climate mitigation effort after that pointless. Last week, scientists announced rapidly melting Antarctic ice is already causing a slowdown of global deep ocean currents by mid-century, leading to an acceleration of sea level rise and dramatic changes in the world's climate and precipitation patterns that will be disastrous and irreversible for centuries. Notwithstanding an anomalous snowpack this year, Utah's future is likely continued drought, high temperatures, increasing wildfires, and a very dark future if we continue with business as usual. but government and business leaders in Utah continue to act in a fog of climate and reality denial in making policy, including UEPA's current vague plans for an Iron Springs inland port. The transloading facilities UEPA wants to subsidize appear to be, first and foremost, infrastructure for increasing exports of fossil fuels and alfalfa, neither of which we can afford to make key elements of Utah's economic future, let alone its centerpiece. If this assumption is wrong, that is an unequivocal abdication of your if this assumption is correct, that is an unequivocal abdication of your responsibility to serve the best interests of Utah's public. If this assumption is incorrect, then UEPA should be transparent and state what exactly these transloading facilities will be shipping and commit to Utah taxpayers that their money will not be spent to further damage our climate and our environmental future. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You did a great job of timing again. We've worked this in with the Inland Port. We have been very careful about holding comments to 2 minutes, for or against, and it seems like we've kind of regained control of the meeting. When this first started, we were there was not a lot of control in what took place, but certainly happy with what's going on today. And thank all the participants.
Dita Seed.
Next up will be Dita Seed.
Oh, Dita Seed. Are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank
awesome.
You.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity to speak. So a couple things, and I will keep within your 2 minute time limit. I'm a little worried that you're contracting with Savage Services for this logistics analysis, and they're also a beneficiary of the Iron Springs Inland Port project. That to me seems like a conflict, and I would urge you to not contract with Savage Services when you're also going to be making judgments about whether they receive tax differential. The other thing is I am concerned about the large amount of tax differential at issue here, $83 million potentially. I read the plan carefully twice, and I'm afraid that it lacks substance and detail in making a business case for why we should, as taxpayers, provide these resources, and whether this is even a viable location for an inland port. If you look at the numbers of containers that are being shipped out of the area right now, it's about 4 containers per day. I'm not a logistics expert, but I just don't see where there's a business case for this. And so it looks to me like it's a taxpayer handout. I'm also concerned about water issues. I appreciate that you are suggesting capping water use at 200,000 gallons a day, but where that makes a lot of sense for the Wasatch Front, that actually may be too much water for a place like Cedar City. I'm also worried about the wildlife habitat issues that were mentioned earlier. The Utah prairie dog is listed as a threatened species, and this would eliminate prairie dog habitat. So there are a lot of things to consider here, and I'm afraid in the cursory information that's been provided and the cursory analysis that's been done, there are really some huge questions about whether this rises to the level of being worthy of tax breaks. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Again, very prompt. Thank you.
Yes, next up is Katie Pappas.
Katie, the time is yours. Katie, are you with us?
Hi, thank you. With recent reports of coal-fired power plant closures by 2032, I was wondering, will Iron Springs and other project area locations in Utah promote and enable the export of coal and other fossil fuels? In the Iron Springs draft project area plan, Savage Services and the transport of mineral resources are each mentioned just once, even though the Savage Rail Port would seem to be a significant part of this project. It's one of two transloading facilities planned. The draft mentions transport of bulk commodities, but not specifically what. Looking into Savage Services, you find their trucks primarily haul and transload crude oil, coal, and hazardous waste. It looks like fossil fuel transport could play a big part in this project, excuse me, and yet that's not reflected in the project area plan. While local environmental impacts seem to be considered, global impacts on the climate are not. If the products being moved are not sustainable or cause harm, the sustainability of the transport method matters less. Fossil fuels burned anywhere affect all of us. Please address this concern prior to approving the draft plan so the public will know your intentions regarding the transport of fossil fuels, if that is what you plan. While we all support economic development, higher paying jobs, and a promising future for rural Utah, promoting a harmful and unsustainable industry is not the way to get there. Thank you.
Thank you. We have one to go back to. Steve Erickson, do we want to try him again?
I think no.
Let's go to Joan Gregory, okay. and then Monica Hilding, and that will complete those who were in the queue to speak.
Okay. So Monica, I believe you're next.
Yeah, Joan Gregory first.
Oh, excuse me, Joan Gregory.
Hi, this is Joan Gregory, and I live in Salt Lake City. I just want to say it's good to see that those of you who traveled for this meeting from Salt Lake City made it to Kanawhaville, I hope safely, and wish you a safe return to Salt Lake City. I've read through the new policies and may have some additional written comments on them, but there is one comment that I think is very important to share today, and that is about the Board Policy 15, the Code of Conduct. Overall, I'm pleased to see this new policy being proposed, but I'm concerned about one item that appears to be missing. I commend you for your value statements where you state your UEPA core values of accountability, sustainability, respect, collaboration, and innovation. I see signs that you're working on practicing some of those, and of course, practice makes perfect. In my opinion, the value that is missing is transparency. Transparency is one of the hallmarks of good governance and good business. Transparency builds trust. Transparency makes it possible to achieve accountability, sustainability, respect, collaboration, and quite possibly contributes to innovation through the sharing of knowledge. I recommend the addition of transparency to the list of UEPA core values, and I encourage the board and the leadership of UEPA to lead by example. Thank you for this opportunity to comment.
Thank you. You see, we have one more.
Yes, our final one will be Monica Hilding.
Okay, Monica, the time is yours.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. After submitting a grammar request to Iron County in 2019 and receiving information from Jonathan Whitaker, it is clear that those companies and individuals who met at Chef Alfredo's in June of 2019 with Derek Miller have coordinated with UEPA continuously since that date. Ben said earlier that this board has accomplished so much in 6 months. However, the Governor's Office of Economic Development includes a rotating roster of individuals from powerful business entities such as the Sorenson Impact Center, Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce, and World Trade Center, who have intimate relationships with government agencies such as the Utah Association of Counties, Permanent Community Impact Board, 7 County Infrastructure Coalition, 5 County Association of Governments, Southeastern Utah Association of Local Government, as well as the Utah Legislature. These people decide on megasites and project areas to facilitate state and federal funds for development and infrastructure. On your resolution for Iron Springs, on page 9, it says there is a need to effectuate a public purpose. My concern is that individuals involved in the groups that I named above do not really represent community interests. So how can they cause to happen public purpose? They are too far removed from community and public purpose. The other thing that I'm concerned about is on page 13, it says that you will respect existing land use and other agreements between property owners within the authority jurisdictional land that were made previously. And I wonder if those agreements support sustainable energy. And then the public purpose for Iron Springs Inland Port project areas for community development in Iron County and throughout southwestern Utah. And the focus here is on development, but what kind of development? Is it going to be sustainable development? Crossroads.
We've reached the end of your time.
Thank you.
We thank you very much for your participation. All right, let's move on. We have two resolutions. We have a resolution that we need to approve, 2023-03, that approves the Iron Springs project area. Again, we're seeing why Mr. Hansen's the chair of this committee. We have the approval. We need to approve the policies of the board, BP04 and BP13. Is the board prepared to make a motion on those policies?
Jerry, I can do that. Amy, my thanks to you for preparing these policies, getting these in front of the board the last couple of months, and then us having an opportunity to seek public comment and then comment on them today. So I move that we approve both policies, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do I have a second on the motion?
I second.
I have a second, a motion and a second. We will call a vote, and would you move forward with that?
Yes. Sorry. Senator Stevenson?
Yes.
Abby Osborne?
Yes.
Ryan Starks?
Yes.
Miles Hansen?
Yes.
And Mike Schultz?
Yes.
That's unanimous.
Yeah, if you would, I'm going to turn the time to Mr. Ben Hart, our executive director, for some comments.
All right. Well, so thank you to those who come to the meeting today and are in person. Thank you for indulging us to get through some of the items related to the port business. So now we are at the portion of our agenda where we get to move into the real reason we're here.
My question is, if we would have handled this item first, would all of you have stayed? Go ahead, Ben.
Well said. Well said. So thank you for enduring with us. It also allowed us to clear the weather out a little bit here in Iron County and Cedar City and the St. George, southwestern Utah part of the state. So we had told everyone we wanted to start this item about 3:30, and we are at 3:32. So we're in good timing. I'm going to ask those who are associated with the presentation, I think Scott's up first, to come up and to prepare. But let me just first say, this is why we're here today. This next agenda item is what's really important for us, not just for the inland port, but for the southwest region of the state of Utah. As I look around the room, we've got tremendous stakeholders who have done a lot of good in this community, in this area, for years and for generations. Today, what we're doing is we are really talking about a project that is going to empower this community and empower this region for generations to come. We're excited to be here. We feel like today is a momentous day, one that will be looked back upon for generations to come as a catalyst that really helped to fuel the economic growth in this part of the state for, again, for generations to come. So we are going to have a few people that are going to take us through the project area plan. While we want this to be a celebratory day, we also realize there's a little bit of business that needs to be done in conjunction with this agenda item as well. So we're going to hear from a few speakers that ultimately will take us through any updates to the project area plan and budget, and that will provide what we hope is a very thorough, transparent review of what our intents here are working with Iron County. At the end of that, at the end of these speakers, we'll have a chance to hear from board members who'd like to comment, and then ultimately for the board to take action. At that point, the process will be completed, and we will have our first official Utah Rural Inland Port in Iron County upon adoption by the board. And I can tell you this is something we're really excited for. Before we get into the presentations, and we'll have a chance to introduce these people as they come up, let me just say a huge thank you, Commissioner Blake, Commissioner Cousins. I can't remember if I saw the third commissioner here or not, but thank you, Commissioner. And I heard from you earlier today as well. Thank you. So I think we've got all three Iron County commissioners, Danny Stewart, the Utah Association of Counties. I see we've got Savage, Commerce Crossroads. There's probably too many people here to say thank you to, but it takes a lot of people to make this happen. Thank you to everybody for being willing to pitch in. And Danny, I particularly want to say thank you to you. This wouldn't happen without your tremendous efforts. Mr. Stewart, thank you for your amazing work to help bring this all together. On our team, Scott and everybody that has worked on this, Stephen, our business development crew, Lynn, Richard, and others, thank you for your leadership on this as well. It's been tremendous. So with that, Mr. Chair, we'll hear from a few people. We'll hear first from Scott, and then we'll go to the next speaker after Scott. But Scott, take it away, if that's okay.
Thank you. Chairman Hansen, Vice Chairman Osborne, honored board members, honored guests, and civic leaders, it is indeed a pleasure to address you here today in Canaryville, Utah. My name is William Scott Wolford. I'm the Vice President with the Business Development Team of the Utah Inland Port Authority. My remarks today regard the presentation of the Iron Springs Inland Port Project Area Plan and Budget. With me today are Business Development Director Stephen Smith, Iron County Director of Economic Development Danny Stewart, and Utah Inland Port Authority Environmental Engineer Simona Smith. The Iron Springs Inland Port Project Area Plan and Budget document was presented to the Port Authority Board on February 27th, 2023. This followed a resolution requesting the creation of an Inland Port Project Area passed by the Iron County Commission on that same day. Where this is the second time the board has seen the document, we will limit our comments to a high-level overview and changes the document that have occurred since that last meeting. The creation of the Iron Springs Inland Port will be a major logistical boon to not just Iron County, but to the region. By building transload facilities that will be able to handle both dimensional and bulk freight, and making them available not just to anchor business tenants and operators, but business interests throughout the region, it will make Iron County a central logistics hub for the entire region. The collaboration of public entities working with the anchor business interests, Commerce Crossroads LLC and Savage Rail Services, this expedites the creation of these logistical assets. The principal additions to the document in your packets regard the addition of a business recruitment strategy and the finalizing of the environmental review. I'd like to invite Business Development Director Stephen Smith to speak to the business recruitment strategy, and following him, Environmental Engineer Simona Smith to give a high-level overview of the environmental review. Following her comments, we would be happy to make staff recommendations and open to any questions the board may have. Director Smith.
Thank you. Good to see you all again. So, as Vice President Wolford mentioned, as we've worked to bring this plan to fruition, one of the important things is as we look at the economic impact of this incredible development here, not only does that have impact on existing business in the region, we want to ensure that is a platform for additional growth at the direction of the county and at the direction of the local leaders. And so with that, we worked to fabricate a recruitment strategy. And it's a base a starting point for this that will evolve as we go. But UIPA in conjunction with, again, the local government and the local economic development, as well as all the partners in the state, will look to build on recruitment through both post-performance rebates, incentives based on property tax differential. Again, it's not a handout up front. It is something that you get as the right businesses come in and they bring value to this area. We can utilize tax differential as part of incentive in this area, and generally those wouldn't exceed 30% of the revenue, but those would be within industries as guided. So in this case, in conjunction with the local economic development and folks here, we are looking at things like light industrial, manufacturing, distribution, agricultural technologies and equipments, plastics, lumber processing, all of those things that fit the market, bring what we think are high-paying jobs into the area. And while those aren't specifically that high-wage component is not targeted here, we think those industries bring that. And so those will be kind of the guidelines that we look at for incentive and recruitment. But again, that policy is not just around the dollars, it's around using that logistics infrastructure that comes with this project that's amazing and we think is just high value to the whole region. Also noted in here, we are considerate of the water usage and the water availability in this area. And so generally speaking, we would look at about 200,000 gallons a day or less in those industries that we would look to recruit. Thank you.
Thank you, board members. Thank you, Vice President Wolford, for the opportunity to speak. I just wanted to quickly summarize some of the key findings that I identified in the environmental review. I'll start with environmental justice considerations. A residential community is located just south of the project area. And in light of environmental justice, I think it's important to consider the composition of this community and the potential effects to the area, and whether minority communities, low-income communities, or Indian tribe members would be potentially affected by the development of the project area. Next, I'd like to point out that there is a freshwater emergent wetland just about a mile northeast of the project area site. If there were to be any potential impacts to the wetland, there is a permitting process facilitated by the Army Corps that would need to be followed. Next, I'd like to point out that a Paiute Indian Tribe of Utah Reservation is located approximately 8 miles southeast of the project area. If the project has the potential to impact tribe members, Chairwoman Karina Bow should be consulted. She currently represents the Southern Paiute Agency. I'd also like to point out that there is suitable habitat within the project area for the Utah prairie dog, which is an endangered species that may be adversely impacted by the development of the project area. So I recommend that clearance surveys be conducted by a qualified biologist during the active season for Utah prairie dogs, which is April 1st through August 31st. And those would need to be conducted during the year prior to sale or development of the project area. And the last finding I'd like to touch upon is migratory birds. There is suitable nesting habitat within the project area for four different migratory birds. And I would recommend that clearing or grubbing activities occur outside the nesting season, which also occurs from April 1st to August 31st. Happy to accept any comments or questions. Thank you.
As the administrative staff of the Utah Inland Port Authority, we find the Iron Springs Inland Port Project Area Plan and Budget complies with all statutory requirements and aligns with the goals and objectives of the Utah Inland Port Authority. We strongly recommend the Port Authority Board approve and adopt this document, thus creating the Iron Springs Inland Port. And with that, we would be happy to answer any questions.
If we do not have any questions from the board, I think we've got a few other people we're going to hear from, Scott. Okay, thank you to the staff and thank you for the recommendation. We wanted to hear from just a few other stakeholders involved in this project. So we first wanted to hear from Philip Hoskins with Savage Services. Next, we wanted to hear from Ryan Obrey with Commerce, Crossroads Logistics. And then lastly, from Danny Stewart. And so three key stakeholders in this project. And so if we could hear from those three individuals, that would be great.
Good afternoon. Thank you, first of all, to the Utah Inland Port Authority for the invitation to speak. And we're excited about the developments here today and looking forward to this going forward. So my name is Philip Hoskins. I'm Vice President of Business Development with Savage. And I'd just like to provide a few comments related to our project and working with Utah Inland Port. As a Utah-based global provider of supply chain infrastructure and services, we're excited about the opportunity the Iron Springs Inland Port will provide Southern Utah businesses, farmers, and communities. By establishing the state's first rural inland port, the Utah Inland Port Authority is creating a framework to support the development of the needed transportation infrastructure in Iron County and drive economic growth in the region. Savage's Southern Utah Rail Port near Cedar City is on track to be completed in the next 12 months. As part of the Iron Springs project area, the rail port will improve access to rail and aid in connecting critical supply chains that move agricultural products, construction materials, and other essential commodities. As many of you know, the benefits of rail transportation include the efficiency and effectiveness of moving freight long distances at a lower cost and often more environmentally friendly versus other modes of transportation. Savage's Southern Utah rail port in Iron County is one of over 50 multi-commodity transload terminals that we own and or operate across North America, including others in the state, which are in Midvale and Tooele. Facilities like this make it viable for local businesses and farmers to transport their products by rail, unlocking new markets, supporting good jobs, and spurring economic growth in rural communities. We appreciate all the work that's gone into this. It's been done by the Inland Port, Cedar City, and Iron County, and others to bring the rural Inland Port to fruition. We're excited to be included in the Iron Springs project area and look forward to building even more relationships in the state, in this part of the state. I'd like to give a special shout out to Danny Stewart. He was definitely instrumental in us getting to the point where we are, and also Reed Erickson, who's not able to join us today with Iron County, but Reed was also very instrumental in the development of our project. So those are my comments. I guess I would just ask if the board has any questions that would like us to address.
Any questions from the board? Explained very well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, board members, community leaders, members of the community, and also state leaders. You guys hear me okay? I'm Ryan Obrey. I'm the project executive for Commerce Crossroads. I want to tell you a little bit about how this project came to be and how BZI and Commerce Crossroads happened. So we love Iron County here at BZI. We love doing business here in Iron County. And as our business grew in this region, we were one of those companies that needed rail access for our business to bring steel into this region. And there was no rail access for businesses that didn't have rail directly to their facilities. So we set out to find 25 or 30 acres to basically expand and get rail access for our facility. We ended up identifying a problem, and we thought if we can solve the problem for us, why don't we just solve it for the region? So we ended up with 830 acres with a plan to build out a transload facility and an industrial park to expand the economic opportunities in this region. But we were one of the companies that couldn't find access to what we needed to really fuel the growth that we saw in our business in this region. And we don't want to leave Cedar City or Iron County. There's great benefits to being in this community. It's a beautiful place. There's national parks around us. We see a great benefit to this project in Cedar City and Iron County. And we appreciate the support of Utah Inland Port, the community leaders at Iron County and at Cedar City with Danny and Economic Development. Here at BZI, one of our purposes is to bring high value employment to the members of our team. That can be in earning opportunities, that can be in a high quality work environment. And we see this industrial park being able to expand that purpose to more community members and to bring more value to this community and to the employment opportunities of the community. So with that, I say thank you and take any questions if there are any.
Any questions from the board? If can I make just a quick comment? Ben, I kind of turned this to you for a few minutes, but if I could, you know, you're doing exactly what we envisioned when we started through the inland port process back in, I think it was 2017. You're not only envisioned it, but you envisioned it first. And I congratulate you on that. So thank you very much.
Ben? All right. We'll lastly hear from Danny Stewart, and then we'll turn it back to the board for consideration. I may make one comment after Danny.
Thank you, board. Thanks so much for traveling to Iron County today. I know the weather wasn't ideal at the beginning of your trip today. Appreciate all the local leaders and other representatives from throughout the region, from throughout the state who are here with us today. This is a project that's been a long time in the works, and I could go on and on about it. And to avoid doing that, I'm going to read some just a prepared statement to be brief. Just so you're aware, 100 years ago this year is when the Union Pacific Railroad came to Cedar City, forever changing the face of our community. The railroad boosted local iron ore and livestock industries, greatly contributed to the expansion of tourism in southern Utah. Cedar City became the center for travel to national parks and monuments. Just so you have an idea of the early impact of the railroad on tourism, in 1920, Zion National Park had 3,692 visitors. In 1930, after the rail came in, that number increased to 55,297 visitors. Last year, Zion's visitation was nearly 4.7 million. None of them came by train. But the rail still contributes significantly to our economy here in Iron County, and it's a great, tremendous asset. Just in the time that I've worked with economic development for Cedar City and Iron County, the rail has been key to the recruitment of GAF Roofing, Mueller Copper Tube West, GOEX Incorporated, and American Packaging Corporation, and also to the expansion of Charlotte Pipe and Genpak, who are here in Cedar City also because of the rail. As a result, we have more than 500 jobs that wouldn't exist otherwise. Today, Utah Iron is shipping millions of tons of iron ore via rail from their mine west of Cedar City to the Port of Long Beach. More than a dozen manufacturing companies are receiving raw materials by rail and shipping their finished products by truck to the largest markets throughout the western U.S., all within a day's drive from Cedar City. These manufacturing companies provide 1 in 10 of Iron County's jobs. And these jobs are among the best compensated primary employment opportunities in the county. We've been able to accomplish some amazing things in cooperation with our partners from the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity, from EDC Utah, from the World Trade Center Utah, and all of our partners at the state and local levels and throughout the region. The creation of the Iron Springs Inland Port today opens new doors of opportunity, not just for Cedar City and Iron County, but throughout all of southwestern Utah. I mentioned that we've had several companies locate here in the past several years specifically to connect to the rail. But in that same time, I've received hundreds of calls from companies that need occasional access to the rail to load or unload products and materials. We don't have the ability to do that yet. You've just heard from representatives of Savage Services and Commerce Crossroads within the New Inland Port Project area, creating rail accessibility to companies from all throughout the region. With these services, BZI Steel can now bring their steel directly to Cedar City via rail. Lighthouse Foods and Hurricane will now have options to unload food-grade oil in Cedar City, much closer than their current unloading locations far out of state. RS Technologies in St. George will have new options to receive their plastic resin for their products. Hay growers from throughout the region will now have new options to ship their products overseas. Rail transloading brings many options to businesses to succeed in southern Utah. The creation of the new Commerce Crossroads Logistics Park, along with our existing Port 15 Utah Industrial Park, gives us more than 1,000 acres of industrial property for new advanced manufacturing distribution development. Developing these lands that have already been planned and zoned for industrial development, this has been key to our economic development strategy for nearly four decades. This means more investment in our community, more employment opportunities for Iron County's families, and hopefully reducing the export of our most valuable resource, which is our educated young people. Several years ago, when I joined with state representatives from several Utah rural counties to explore plans for statewide inland port satellite system, this was our goal, to partner with private industry and with the Utah Inland Port to better utilize our transportation assets and to improve the movement of products and materials throughout the state, ultimately to create new business opportunities throughout rural Utah. Today's meeting represents many years of hard work and collaboration. It fits perfectly within our local economic development strategy that's been developed for decades. This meeting today means a great deal to me personally. It means a great deal to Cedar City, to Iron County, and to all of southwestern Utah. I'm very grateful to partner with the Inland Port as we begin this new project area together in Iron County. This partnership is crucial to our community as we move into the future. We anticipate that this partnership will be every bit as impactful today and for our future as the train coming to town was 100 years ago. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well said. I don't know if I can ever top Danny, so I won't try. Well said, Mr. Stewart. For those who are here, just let me point out again quickly. Thank you, Commissioner Wood, Commissioner Cousins, Commissioner Blake, Danny. I also want to say to Senator Vickers, the leadership, the elected officials, those who are willing to put this community first and really rally support to bring the resources, to bring the attention, to bring all of the benefits to Iron County, it's tremendous. You have significant leadership here in Iron County, and I hope that's not taken for granted. So thank you to them. Let me also just say, as we look at this project, you know, this comes from, you know, almost 20 years, I guess more than 20 years of economic development experience. When I say this, when you have the logistics facility, when you have the sites, when you have the project area, bringing all of these things together, it doesn't just create a job or a few jobs. It creates thousands of jobs. It creates jobs that are going to have multiplier impacts across this entire region. It brings the right kind of jobs. It's not just growth for growth's sake. It brings jobs that are going to keep your kids, your grandkids here. It's going to keep them gainfully employed. It's going to make this region competitive, not only with the Wasatch Front, but with other markets in the Western United States. Today's announcement, it may not be about a single company or a single job. It's about the future of the economy in southwestern Utah. That's what this partnership brings to fruition. So we are ecstatic for this opportunity. We realize that it's been a lot of work. We thank those leaders at Iron County. We thank those who've been involved in this project and the development of this project on the port side. And we feel like now is the right time to finalize and adopt this project area and get started to really work hand in glove to improve the and grow the economy here in southwestern Utah. So, Mr. Chair, that is our presentation. We'll turn it back to you for board consideration, comments, and action.
Thank you very much. I don't think I can add to that. What a great project for this area, though, and what a great addition it will be. With that, what I'm looking for now from the board is a resolution or a motion to consider the resolution that before us, which is 2023-03. And I would ask a board member if they would make that motion.
Senator Stevens, I'll go ahead and make that motion.
Have a motion that was Miles. There we go.
I'll make a second.
And I need a second.
That this was is Ryan. Second.
From Brian Starks, or Ryan Starks. Thank you. We now have a motion on the floor for the approval of 2023-03. Does anyone have any comment on that motion? If not, we would vote, and we would ask Larry if he would call a vote. Oh, excuse me, Ryan, you have a comment. I don't have the board in front of me. The time is yours.
You're okay. Thank you. I just want to speak in favor of this motion and congratulate Iron County, both the commissioners and Danny Stewart, who's always been a great partner. As we think about rural economic development, it's really about infrastructure. And as we build it, we can then attract the right types of industries and companies. So just on behalf of the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity, we're committed to supporting Iron County in the Inland Port, to being good partners. We work closely with companies that are interested in the area, and we think that this is going to be the mechanism to help foster that growth and expansion in a smart way. So just very excited about this announcement, and you have my full support. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mike Schultz, I believe you have a comment.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to speak in support of this motion, but I just want to congratulate all those that have spent the time working on this to make it come to fruition. Ben and the Inland Port team, thank you. Iron County team, thank you guys. This is, in my eyes, probably really what I think the Inland Port ought to focus on, and that's economic development in rural Utah. So thank you for everything that you're doing, and we're grateful to be partners. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Representative. Anyone else? If not, let's go ahead with a vote. Larry, would you call a vote?
Yes. Senator Stevenson?
I vote yes.
Representative Schultz?
Yes.
Abby Osborne?
Yes.
Ryan Starks?
Yes.
And Chair Miles Hansen?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. That motion passes unanimously, and I would, I think I can say as acting chair that that's probably the most important vote other than forming the Inland Port that this board has ever taken. And this is the beginning of a lot of really great things for the state of Utah and the economy of the state. And it's really a great thing for Iron County and the surrounding areas. So thank you very much, all of you, for your diligence. And unless any of the other board members have comments, I think I am prepared for one last motion.
Board? Mr. Chair, nice work today on the timing, and congratulations to Iron County, and I move that we adjourn.
I have a motion to adjourn. It is non-debatable, so we will ask for all those in favor. I'm just going to ask you to say aye. I don't think we're going to get an opposing vote.
Aye.
In favor.
Aye.
That sounded quite unanimous to me. So thank you very much. Thanks all of you for being here today.